It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day, and Iowa is beginning to bloom. This hour, we'll talk about native wildflowers, and of course, we will also answer your questions. Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron will join us in a few minutes, but we're going to start today with Deb Lewis, curator of the Ada Hayden Herbarium at Iowa State University. Hello, Deb.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today. And will you quench a little bit of our curiosity first? Tell me what the Ada Hayden Herbarium is.
It is a natural history museum of dried and pressed plants and dried fungi, lichens, mosses, and other things that really shouldn't be pressed to preserve them. And we have about 660,000 specimens at Iowa State within the herbarium of everything that has fit traditionally under the botany umbrella.
Wow. And can people come and visit that?
By appointment, yes. If they let me know, I would be happy to show them the herbarium.
Okay, wonderful. Well, Deb, thank you so much for being here today. And you're going to share some of your wildflower expertise with us. And this is such an exciting time of year because things are just starting to bloom. What are some of the flowers you've seen already in our woodlands?
Well, it started with the snow trilliums. And I don't have any growing on my property as native here, but a friend of mine gave me some, and they have already come out, and their blooms are already fading. But there are a lot of others that are just now coming into bloom, and those include things like Spring Beauty with its pink flowers and very narrow leaves, Dutchman's Breeches that look like pants hanging upside down on the clothesline that kind of arches, and so those are really cool. Bloodroot. It has 8 white petals and leaves that, a single leaf that uncurls like bat wings. Hepatica with its 3 lobed leaves and white to purplish flowers. And several others.
We had some really warm temperatures that kind of boosted all of these blooms. Of course, it's visible in our urban areas as well as we're starting to see some of our flowering trees bloom and things like that. And then, of course, things got cold. We actually had snow yesterday, but these are our native wildflowers. So do those kinds of changes affect their ability to bloom? Is this going to slow things down now that we cooled off again?
It's hard to say because we're bouncing back and forth between warm and cool days. And so they're getting lots of sunshine today, even though it's pretty chilly outside. That will probably help them to go ahead and progress with their blooming. In fact, over the past couple of days, I've seen things progressing in their breaking their buds and opening the flowers. And I've also seen things like bloodroot that have been out for a week or so, but they have very delicate blooms. And this wind that we've had has made them drop a lot of their petals.
Absolutely. Well, we are on the cusp, at least in southeastern Iowa. Of course, things bloom at different times in different parts of the state. We're on the cusp of having Virginia bluebells in bloom. Tell me about those flowers, because they're my absolute favorite flower.
Well, they start out, those kind of blue-green looking leaves start popping up first. And there's usually a couple of those leaves, and if you look down between them, you might see the small buds forming. And whenever they start in bud, they're usually kind of a pinkish color. But by the time those buds expand, they become blue flowers, which is pretty amazing.
And they have a wonderful fragrance. I have a little woodland area on my property, and one of the first things we did was plant some bluebells there, and they've been slowly spreading over time. But that kind of makes me think about some of these places in Iowa that are just carpeted with bluebells. The Katoski Greenbelt in Cedar Falls and Waterloo is actually one of my favorite places to go to see bluebells, and it's always a spectacular show. I probably won't make it up there this year with social distancing, but how long does it take for these woodlands to become covered with bluebells? I mean, that's decades and decades of spreading.
Well, they do spread fairly quickly compared to some of the other spring wildflowers, but it's hard to say, you know, how long those may have been there that are creating those carpets. Maybe, you know, centuries.
Right.
And probably a spot where they have been just native, and instead of, you know, planted and allowed to spread, like mine in my woodland flower bed is the result of planting them there. And they are spreading, but and they're spreading in a way that's pretty hardy. They even are colonizing the edge of our limestone driveway.
Oh, wow.
So they don't seem to be too picky once they get established somewhere.
Well, and I've found that in the area where I planted them, they seem to like the trail that we have through it more than they like the more overgrown parts of the area. So they may not follow exactly what I want them to do either.
Yes.
I want to talk about May apples because they're such an unusual plant. And of course, they're not quite ready for us to enjoy yet. May apple is a pretty good name for them, I think. But
yes,
tell me a little bit about that plant.
Well, like the I mentioned for bloodroot, the leaves, when they first pop up, they look like they are curled. And they will, as they grow larger and expand, it again is like bat wings opening up. And so I think they're pretty cool. They have a single flower. For those that are old enough to flower, the first year plants, whenever they pop up, they will just have a single leaf that looks like an umbrella leaf. The 2 or 3 or 4 years old plants will have a split to create two leaves. And at the base of that split, there will be a single, fairly large white flower that becomes the May apple. And the May apples are closely related to the mandrakes of Europe. Now, I wouldn't recommend trying it for the medicinal purposes that mandrakes have been used in the past, at least without checking online. There are some place to be sure that that is something to do. I'm not much of a wildflower eater or anything.
Enjoy looking at them.
Enjoy it. Definitely enjoy looking at it and watching as it changes from those waxy petaled blooms into the fairly large fruits that are formed.
Now, with our native prairies in Iowa, of course, I think about summer and even parts of autumn as being the best times for color and blooms in the prairies. But there are a few early spring prairie flowers, right?
Yes, including one of the earliest that blooms in the state, along with the, I mentioned snow trilliums already. On the prairies, pasque flowers make their appearance by maybe mid-March to April. They often come up in the snow. And around this time of year, you might find the native prairie dandelion, betony, golden alexanders, pussy toes, some of the other really early prairie small-growing things typically that come out and bloom before they get overtopped by the larger prairie plants.
And what about in our wetlands?
We have stunt cabbage, again, maybe the very earliest wildflower to bloom. It is found only in the eastern one-third of Iowa, but it often comes up even in February, right out of the snow. And it attracts beetles because it smells like carrion. It's kind of stinky, so it has an appropriate name of skunk cabbage. And it's found in like wetland seeps, and all often in woodlands, sometimes in more open areas. And I said often, well, it's a pretty rare plant for the state, but it's really cool whenever you see the skunk cabbages.
Now, of course, right now, while we are staying safe at home, looking for information about wildflowers online is probably your best bet. But you have some favorite wildflower guides that can really help us learn a lot more about these plants. Can you tell me about some of your favorites, things that maybe we want to add to our own libraries?
Well, there's a series of three books on wildflowers that is published by the University of Iowa Press. And the one that I'm most referring to for our talk today is Wildflowers of Iowa Woodlands. It's out in the second edition with newly shot photographs since the first edition. Similar to that, there is Wildflowers of the Tallgrass Prairie, and also Wildflowers and Other Plants of Iowa Wetlands. All of those now in the second edition. But even if you've got the first edition that was published many years ago by ISU Press when that was in existence, it can be helpful as well. But I really love the updated second edition of these.
Right. And you also have a couple very portable guides that you like that you can take with you on a hike.
Yes. The University of Iowa Press also has come out with a whole series of in-your-pocket guides. And these fold up like a map, and they're laminated, so if you're out in the rain or something like that, they won't get damaged. And there is one on wildflowers of the woodlands, and or it's Woodland Wildflowers in Your Pocket, and it and Prairie Wildflowers in Your Pocket and Wetland Wildflowers in Your Pocket were all done by Mark Mueller, who does just beautiful illustrations of plants.
All right, we are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment with me, Deb Lewis, curator of the Ada Hayden Herbarium at Iowa State University. Richard Geron is going to join us in a moment. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. 866-780-9100 is the number to call, or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We've been talking about native wildflowers in Iowa with Deb Lewis, curator of the Ada Hayden Herbarium at Iowa State University. Also with us now, Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you. Are you starting to see some beautiful things in bloom?
Yes. Deb said, the bloodroot was in bloom this week. But the winds and the cold have kind of tattered the flowers. Daffodils are in bloom. Siberian squill, some of those are in bloom.
Absolutely. My daffodils just started blooming, I think, on Tuesday, which was such a welcome sight. And we've got magnolia trees in Iowa City in bloom. And I took a gorgeous picture of one right before the winds picked up. So at least I have a photograph to remember those blossoms by. I'm glad that the crabapple weren't quite in bloom yet, although who knows what windy days we have on the horizon. You are welcome to join our conversation with your questions today. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And before we dive into that, Deb, a lot of people want to bring these wildflowers home to their properties. We were just talking about the wildflowers we've planted on our own properties. And of course, you cannot dig them up and take them from public parks. But what can you do? Where can you turn if you want to buy these plants or these seeds?
Well, there are some nurseries and other suppliers here in the state, including Ion Exchange up in Harper's Ferry. And Richard may know of maybe even some garden centers here in central Iowa or across the state that I may be less familiar with that also have them. So, Richard, what do you think?
Well, certain ones like Virginia bluebells, bloodroot, wild ginger, you can typically find those at many garden centers. So they're fairly common.
All right, so they're out there if you look for them and try to find a nice spot on your property. Do Richard, do people sometimes go a little wrong trying to put these native flowers in a more groomed, traditional garden environment? Is it hard to grow them outside of their native habitat?
No, not really. If they have a suitable location, like Virginia bluebells, if they have partial shade and a nice, moist, well-drained soil, they do fine, and they receive themselves very freely. So if they have a site that kind of mimics where they grow naturally, they're fine.
All right, let's get to the calls. 866-780-9100 is the number. Ellen is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Ellen.
Morning.
Hi, what's your question?
Mike, I have two questions. And the first one is it better to aerate my lawn in the spring or the fall?
All right.
And the second, okay, and the second one is, how severely can I prune a shrub rose that's about 5 foot tall and maybe 3 or 4 feet in diameter?
Okay. As far as core aeration, you can do that in the spring. I would say maybe late next week or the following week would be fine. You could also do it in late summer, like September. So it's really up to you. As far as the roses, if they're a repeat blooming type rose, you can cut those back fairly severely. Let's say maybe 6 inches, 8 inches from the ground, and they'll still grow back and still bloom. So you can do that if you desire to do so.
All right, Ellen, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we've got Connie in Norwalk. Hi, Connie.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I have arborvitae plants, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Trees that I got last October, and I just went out this week and looked, and they kind of look like they were dying. But they have some kind of a, there's about two of them that aren't too bad, but they all eight of them have something, and a couple of them are really bad.
Yeah, I think what may have happened, they may have suffered quite a bit of winter injury. When you plant them in like October, they really don't have much time to get reestablished before winter. And then if we have a difficult winter, the sun and wind can dry them out. And when that happens, that foliage turns kind of a grayish green and then eventually brown. So I suspect some of these have suffered some major damage and they may not fully recover. As far as planting arborvitae, it's typically better to plant them, if you can, in the spring, and that gives them the whole growing season to get established before winter. But when you plant in the fall, you can have some problems.
Okay, is there anything she can do at this point?
Not really. Just wait and see what they look like toward maybe mid to late May. And like I said, if this tissue actually is dead, it's eventually going to turn brown and be very crunchy. And if that's the situation in mid-May, you may have lost the plant.
Okay, Connie. So it's a wait-and-see game, and we hope that things look better in a few weeks. Next, let's go to John in Des Moines. Hi, John.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have a plant that I've been trying to identify for several years. When I'm walking through the city parks, in the mowed areas, it grows very low to the ground, maybe an inch tall. The plant is only like an inch tall. And the flower is blue, and it's very small, maybe an inch or an eighth of an inch to maybe 3/16 of an inch at the most. Very, very tiny flower.
Is it blooming now?
Yes.
And what does the leaf look like? Do you know?
Well, it's almost more like a clover leaf in a way. I mean, that's how it kind of grows in little patches.
Okay.
If you walk through any of the city parks right now, you can probably see it. Very tiny.
Yeah, I'm guessing it might be our friend Creeping Charlie.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I have
Creeping Charlie, and I know what that is.
Okay.
Could I photograph it and send it somewhere?
Sure. Take some photographs, two or three, and send those, attach those to an email. And the email address is Hortline, H O RTLINE mm-hmm. at IASTATE.edu.
Okay, let me repeat that. Hortline at IASTATE.edu.
IA State.
IIA
State.
Yes, STATE.
Yep.
Spell it out all the way.
Yep, you've got it, John. Thanks so much for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. All right, Tim's on the line next in Moline. Hi, Tim.
Hello. I had a couple plants I had questions about. I had found a stand of celandine poppy near my home, and I picked some of the seed pods and tossed it in my ravine, hopefully that it would naturalize. Is that a possibility, or do I need to do something extra to them?
Well, I would think that you might have to maybe kind of work up the soil and kind of work the seed into the soil in an area where you can kind of look out for them. Just throwing them in a ditch where you have all this other competition or other plants probably won't work very well. So you probably have to kind of nurse them along, where you kind of work the seed into the soil and take care of them maybe until they get established.
Should I be putting them in flats and growing seedlings?
You could try that. You could try that. But you could also do it outside, maybe in a small little patch where you kind of clear the area and you sow your seed and kind of just kind of rake it in to the soil and see what happens. But if you just toss it where you have existing vegetation, it's probably not going to come up.
Okay. And then in Birds in Bloom, the most recent magazine, they had a pink root, a spagella, which they claim is a native, and I've never ever seen around here. Is that something that's hardy in the zone? Spagella marlandica?
Was that Spigelia, S-P-I-G-E-L-I-A? Yes. I think that one is native further south of here. I remember encountering that one down in Arkansas, but I don't know how far north its range extends. And as far as I know, we don't have it as a native here in Iowa.
Right. The cultivar, I guess the cultivar, they said zone 5.
Okay, that would probably put it at least up to the middle part of the state as able to survive.
Right.
So maybe it's worth a try.
No one has the experience with that at all, right? You guys, it must be pretty
not here.
Pretty much
I don't.
Southern plant.
I do not either.
All right.
So.
Okay, super. Yep. All right, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Tim. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Let's do a few email questions here. We have one from Larry in Elkader. We have a pear tree that's about 5 years old. It has a number of side shoots growing from the lower trunk. Is it too late in the year to prune them off?
I would say no, but do it by next weekend.
All right, and maybe today if you've got the time to get out there. It's a very pleasant day, and it's going to rain all weekend. So from Lynn in Iowa City, when is the best time to transplant clematis?
I would say probably right about now. Once they start to grow, they grow very quickly. So I would try doing it now, dig up a nice ball of dirt with it, and put it right back in the ground. But I would try to do that very, very soon.
All right. Here's a question from Margaret in Shoeyville. Our fall spirea are spreading all over the place. What's the best way to stop the spread?
Probably digging up the plants as best you can.
Okay. She's also wondering if she can dig out some of the fall spirea babies and put them in a pot. So she says that because she's probably not going to be shopping this spring, she's looking for perennials that she can divide and put into pots as alternatives to annuals she'd buy from the store.
They could try that if the pot is big enough.
All right. Are there any other perennials that she might be able to do that with or that would be more successful?
Putting in a pot... I'm thinking most are not going to, they could try some daylilies. That would be an easy one, I think.
Okay.
Some of those repeat blooming varieties that bloom for maybe 8, 10, 12 weeks periodically through the summer. That would be it. They're very tough plants, very resilient.
All right. Here's a question from Anne in Bettendorf. Are there any native Iowa wildflowers that are good for butterflies or other pollinators?
Well, I think, for example, with the Virginia bluebells, for example, there's a bumblebee that gets down into that kind of bell-shaped flower. I don't think the honeybees can do it because they're not big enough, but I think, for example, the bumblebee is big enough and has enough force to get down into there, and it's a pretty common insect on that plant.
Right. Deb, did you have something you wanted to say about that?
I noticed on my bloodroots that I had a collection of different kinds of insects that were already going at the pollen. It doesn't produce nectar, but I had small bees, beetles, and other kinds of pollinators that were on the bloodroot. And I think that that is true for quite a number of the other spring wildflowers. Those that have tubular flowers, like I'm totally spacing on the names right now. Anyway, a lot of them, including things like Spring Beauty and all, also are good spring wildflower pollinator plants.
Well, and now I'm not an entomologist or a horticulturist, but I would imagine that the native wildflowers would be something that our native pollinators would have sort of co-evolved with, right?
That is true. So, yes, any number of them should be. Some of them produce nectar. Some of them, all of them produce pollen. And those can be food sources for those early pollinators.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Scott is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. Just was wondering, we've got three pretty cold nights ahead coming up and going to be going down into the 20s, and I'm wondering what we need to do to protect in preparation, or if we should be okay through next week on that. And then I wanted to ask you one quick question about mustard, which you probably get all the time. It's flourishing in the back, and I hit it with some Roundup, and it laughed at me.
Oh, so you're talking about garlic mustard there.
Oh, it's a
great time of year to pull garlic mustard. First, let's start with that cold snap question with things that are in bloom already. Richard, do we need to think about covering things, or is there any concerns right now?
I think with most of the perennials that are coming up and beginning to grow, I think they can handle it pretty well. There might be some minor damage, but they should recover fairly quickly. I don't see a need to cover them up. I think they'll be fine. As far as if you have blooming trees like magnolias, that will freeze the flowers.
Take a picture right now.
Right, take a picture today, because by Monday or Tuesday, they may be just brown, where they have frozen and turning brown. So they don't tolerate freezing temperatures very well at all.
And garlic mustard, which is everywhere.
Yes.
Well, you have different ways of doing it. Digging it up is one option. Using Roundup is another option. So you do have a few options to do it. But it is a very, very resilient plant.
Well, and I know a lot of people this time of year, and maybe there will be an interruption in this, but a lot of people try to get out into our natural places, our wilderness places, and pull it this time of year. And because it is so resilient, you want to pull it before it flowers, and you want to actually remove the plants, carry a bag with you and put the plants
right
in a bag, because they will re-root, right?
Well, they're,
yes,
they're
okay,
a very
yeah
prolific
Deb,
seed producer.
Sounds like you have experience with that.
They also, if they have already started to flower, they will go ahead and set their fruits even after pulling, or the fruits will continue to mature. And so that's one reason for carrying it out off the site. So that's a great idea to bag them up and take them away.
All right. And if you are looking for a hobby that is socially distant from other people, maybe this is the year to really take on garlic mustard. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa with me, Deb Lewis, curator of the Ada Hayden Herbarium at Iowa State University. Richard Giron is here, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. Call with your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can also send us email, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Also, I want to just take a moment to say thank you to all of you who have supported Iowa Public Radio. Of course, we had to cancel our spring membership drive, but we've heard from so many dedicated listeners and members who have supported in spite of that. Thank you so much if you've been part of that effort. And thank you if you're one of our sustaining members. You keep us going. You can still give at iowapublicradio.org. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call, or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Let's go next to Annie on the line in Iowa City. My guests, by the way, are Deb Lewis, curator of the Ada Hayden Herbarium at Iowa State University, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hello, Annie. Annie, what's your question?
Hi. So like everyone else, I've been looking for hobbies to do at home. And one of those things has been cleaning. And I found seeds that are cilantro seeds and are 10 years old. And I'm trying to grow them. But I haven't been patient enough here. But I was wondering if they even stand a chance.
I would guess they're no longer viable. A lot of seeds will remain viable for maybe 2 or 3 years, some up to 4 to 5 years, but 10 years is a long, long time. Now, you can do a test if you want where you take a paper towel and moisten that and then place the seed inside and kind of fold over the paper toweling and keep it moist and see if they germinate. But I would suspect if they're 10 years old, they're no longer viable.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100. Maybe time to take advantage of curbside pickup options at many local nurseries as they're trying to stay in business this spring as well. Let's go next to Robin on the line in Pella. Hi, Robin.
Hi, Charity. Last fall, I noticed something that I think I've identified as pixie cup lichen. And I think it was a result of hardwood mulch, and it was everywhere around everything that I mulched, and sometimes looked like it could even choke off the plants it was around. I'm interested in it, and this spring, I can find it. It seems to have dried up. Will it come back? Is it something that I should be happy about? What is pixie cup lichen?
Well, Deb, that sounds like a good question for you.
I am not super familiar with lichen, okay. But pixie cup is, I think, one of the ones that is a little more common in the state, and they are very interesting.
And they look like little tiny cups.
They do. They do. And they're often kind of a bluish-green color, and they're often on a long stalk for the pixie cups. And I think that once they get established someplace, they tend to last. So I wouldn't be surprised if you didn't see them coming back again this spring.
All right. Well, so if she's concerned about them choking out other plants, Richard, what do you think? Is that something to be worried about?
I wouldn't think they would. They can grow in very difficult sites, but I don't think they're going to crowd out other plants, desirable plants.
Okay, that's good news. Robin, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Susan in Windsor Heights. Hi, Susan.
Good morning. We planted a forsythia bush in our backyard when we bought this house about 16 years ago. It has flourished. But last year, there were almost no blooms on it, and this year, there are very few blooms on it.
Okay.
It's gotten huge, I'd love for it to be able to bloom again. Richard, what do you say?
Well, I think you have a variety where the flower buds may not be very cold hardy. There are a number of varieties on the market, and certain ones like Linwood Gold, which is very common, especially at some of the big box stores, the flower buds are not very cold hardy. And if you have temperatures of, let's say, minus 15, minus 20, that's actually going to kill the flower buds. So you have this nice green shrub, but you only have flowers on those winters that are fairly mild. So if you want a forsythia that blooms reliably, there are some varieties that are extremely cold hardy. Meadow Lark is one. That came, I think, from the University of North Dakota State. It is very, very cold hardy. So that blooms reliably. And that grows about around 8 foot tall. But it is a very reliable bloomer. There's also one from Minnesota. I think it's Northern Gold. Again, very, very hardy. And also from Iowa State, there's one that's kind of hard to find, but it's called Sunrise. And that also blooms well. It's also more compact. It grows about 4 to 5 feet tall. But look for a variety that's very, very cold hardy, and they should bloom reliably every year.
All right, Susan, thanks a lot for your call. We've got another forsythia question from Bob in Ames. He says, can a large clump of forsythia be divided without killing the plant?
Boy, that I would say would be difficult as far as division, but those stems root very, very easily. So if you prune off a small little twig, maybe a foot, foot and a half in length, and stick it in a pot and keep it moist, there's a very good chance it's going to root and you have a new plant.
All right. Here's a question from Mark in Albia. I bought some ostrich fern and Christmas fern roots I'd like to try to establish in some bald and damp spots in some heavily shaded spots in my yard, but I'm trying to determine which of two possible spots might suit it best and the best time to put them in. So the two choices are a north-facing slope site with good drainage interspersed with other flowering perennials, or a west-facing and low-lying and totally barren spot with full shade?
I'm looking more maybe at the soil, one that's very, very well-drained, that has high levels of organic matter. That, to me, would be the best site for them.
Okay, so that sloping site with the good drainage is probably better than a low spot.
If it has a lot of organic matter in it, yes, probably.
All right. And he says, finally, how aggressively do ferns reseed and self-propagate? Is crowding out other native or neighboring perennials an issue?
Well, there are some ferns that are very aggressive, like the ostrich fern, which is probably the most common native fern that you see in landscapes. That spreads pretty aggressively. Most other ferns don't spread that easily.
All right, here's a question from Joyce. My daffodils no longer bloom. They've been in the same spot for 16 years. They used to bloom profusely. They get plenty of sun. I leave the leaves until they're totally spent. I've never fed them. Do I need to feed them, or do I need to dig and divide the bulbs?
You don't need to feed them. I think maybe they have become overcrowded. Typically, if they have a suitable location where they get plenty of sun and you allow them to die back on their own, they'll typically bloom for 10 or 15 years. If you cut them back prematurely or if they don't have enough sun, they will decline in vigor and no longer bloom. But if they're getting enough sun, I would assume it's a crowding issue. And what I would probably do is maybe mark them this spring and then dig them up in the fall and transplant them.
All right. And let's go back to the phones. Bob is on the line in Carlisle. Hi, Bob.
Hello, thank you for taking my call, Charity.
Yeah, what's your question?
Okay, I have a question regarding some hollies I have planted on my property. They've been in their present location for approximately 30 years. And this year I noticed a few little spots on the leaves, little brown spots, and spots seem to get a little bigger. Now, is this going to severely damage the plant, or is it just a minor problem, being the plants have been in their location for 30 years, and they're also approximately 4 foot by 4 foot, 4 foot across, 4 foot high, so they're quite large.
Okay. Was the spotting present in the fall?
I really didn't notice in the fall. I just noticed it in the spring.
Okay. I'm thinking if the spotting occurred over winter, that would typically be winter-type injury, not a pathogen.
Okay.
If the spotting was present last summer, then I would suspect it may be a pathogen. What you could do is take some photos and send those to our plant diagnostic clinic here at Iowa State. And their email address is P as in plant, I as in insect, D as in disease, C as in clinic, at iastate.edu, and see if they might have some idea.
Right. Well, the plant's already starting to set buds, so that part is healthy. And they're also setting up some new growth as well.
Which is a good sign.
All right, Bob. I hope it turns out well. Thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Doug in Mount Vernon. Hi, Doug.
Hello. We have a 30 by 30 foot at least magnolia tree. The first 3 years we've lived here, it's bloomed beautifully. And then 2 years ago, we had a hard winter. And then last spring, about a third of it had blossoms and no more. And it looks like it's going to be the same this year. There's just about a third with buds on it. Do we chop down a huge part of the tree, or what would we do when we cut them off?
That the portion that doesn't bloom, does it leaf out?
No.
No. So that one portion basically has no leaves, no flowers, nothing.
Right.
Okay,
right.
That portion basically is dead, and I would cut it out, prune it out. But if you do that, if you stand back and look at it, and it doesn't really look very attractive as far as the shape of the plant, you might consider replacing it. And there are some very good magnolias out there. For example, the star magnolia, it performs pretty well here in Iowa. It's currently blooming. It has white flowers. It's more of a large shrub, grows about maybe 8 to 10 feet tall. And then you have the Merrill magnolias, which we have on campus here at Iowa State, too. They get to be bigger trees, maybe 25, 30 feet tall, and they have pure white flowers, and they tend to be quite hardy, too. So you might want to consider some of those.
All right, Doug, thanks a lot for your call. Let's do a couple more email questions here. This one's from Marlene. My 25-year-old yucca plant has lost most of its foliage. It looks like something may be dug around the plant, and the base appears kind of soft. There are a few green shoots left. Is there anything to do to revive it? I did replace the dirt that had been dug away.
This is an outdoor yucca?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. That's a very, very resilient plant. I think I would just cut it off at the ground and see what comes back up, because I've seen that where people have cut it off trying to kill it, and it comes back just as good as ever. So I'd try that.
All right. From Robert, what should be done with a row of Carl Forster grasses that are just showing new growth, but in an 18-inch ring with a 6-inch dead center?
That's typical when the ornamental grasses start to mature and get older. The center dies out. And usually that's a pretty good sign that maybe you want to dig up that entire clump and divide it, where you cut out the center and toss it, and then divide the ring into sections and replant. And early spring is a good time for that.
All right. Here's a question from Mary. I've seen posts on social media saying that Siberian squill is not native and is very invasive. This has me scratching my head because the flowers disappear so early in the season and whatever else is growing there seems to be fine. Can you clarify?
Well, Siberian squill is not native. It does naturalize. But I will tell you there are areas on campus that are just a sea of blue in the spring. And there's virtually no way to get rid of it, even if you wanted to. So I just accept it. It's very, very common.
All right. But it could be considered invasive, is what you're
By
saying.
By some, yes.
All right. Erin in Williamsburg is looking for a replacement for 3 boxwoods on her porch. These are full sun, south facing. Any suggestions?
I would probably think of yews. They're very, very common, I know, but they will grow in sun or shade, and they're much more dependable than boxwood. And they are evergreen, obviously.
All right, let's get in. One more phone call here. Chuck is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Chuck.
Good morning, Charity. First of all, thank you for a great program. You and your guests do a really good job. I enjoy it every week. We have three rhododendrons. They're PJM rhododendrons, and they've been blooming. They started blooming, last week. And what I've noticed is that most of the blooms are on the top of the plant. They seem to be, like, really leggy, and there's not much foliage or blooms on the bottom two-thirds of the plant. Is there anything I can do to increase the amount of foliage and blooms that on the bottom of the plant?
Well, that's pretty typical for those. That's what they kind of do. And it's hard to get them. It's kind of like a lilac. They tend to be a little bit leggy as they get older, and the flowers tend to be at the top. So I would basically accept what they do. You could prune them back, but I would be inclined just to accept what they look like.
Okay, well, thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call. And let's fit in a couple more emails here from Kevin. I planted some young shrubs last spring. They're 2 feet tall. Pruned them twice during the summer to create more branching and future density. My question, should I prune them again this season? How often in the best time of year?
Well, if they filled in quite nicely, I wouldn't bother about that. Now, it kind of depends upon the shrub, but many of those will fill in pretty well on their own.
All right. Anne Marie in Iowa City says, last year was the first time I tried to start tomato plants from seed indoors under a grow light. They did well until they were about an inch to an inch and a half tall. Then they just shriveled and died. I understand that you're supposed to lift the height of the light as the plants grow, but exactly when and how high? Maybe that was my error.
I don't think it was the lighting. They may have got damping off, which is a very common fungal disease. So once the actual seed germinates, don't keep it too wet. If they're crowded or if they're too wet, those conditions are favorable for damping off, where the little seedling just simply curls up and dies. I don't think it has anything to do with the light.
All right. And a lawn question to go out on, is there such a thing as it being too cold to put down crabgrass preventer?
Well, yes, in that if you put it on too soon, it's going to break down before the crabgrass seed is germinated. And with the forecast for next week of temperatures in the 20s at night, I would not put it on any sooner than next weekend.
All right. And we are out of time. Richard Giron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Deb Lewis, what a pleasure. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for this opportunity, Charity.
Deb Lewis, curator of the Ada Hayden Herbarium at Iowa State University. And you can check out our website for some of those guides that she recommended to learn more about Iowa's native wildflowers. Go to iowapublicradio.org and look for Talk of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.